House Minority Leader, I wonder if there's any news that what can we talk about? I don't know. Yeah, they're really not in session. They're not going into session. I don't know. There's no news, I would imagine. Nothing.
Nothing big. Not at all.
Nothing going on here. We'll bring her on anyways. What the heck? Themis, good morning.
Good morning, Gary.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm not too shabby. There's really not much going on. I mean, I hear that the legislature's going to be shut down and nothing's gonna happen between now and the first Wednesday of May. Maybe a special session. Nothing really to discuss, right?
It's a slow week.
I was even thinking about, Themis doesn't need, she probably doesn't want to come on, nothing to discuss. It's been nothing in the news, nothing she want to discuss or anything. I don't know. I mean, how's your week been otherwise?
It's been a little bit hectic.
Yeah.
A little bit emotional.
I'll bet it is. But I also have to tell you, when people were bringing this to my attention, actually we announced this news earlier in the week that you were not seeking re-election this year. And I actually said to myself, I'm not surprised. And then
I'm really not.
Particularly with, I may even have your statement still somewhere here from a couple of days ago. But I know not only will you stay active, but I think that, I don't think you've run your last campaign neither, though.
No, I actually, the statement I think you're looking for, as I said, I've been so honored to serve in this legislature and for the past 6 years to lead that amazing caucus that you were part of smart, passionate, hardworking people. But my time in public service isn't over.
No. I know it's. Oh, here we go. Thank you very much, Christian. Christian went and dug this out. I know it's not. And kind of reading between the lines, I'll let you make your own announcements when you delve into something else that I wouldn't, no one should ever take that away from you when the time is right, of course. But just knowing what I know of you, I'm like, before I even read that you're not done with public service, I knew you weren't. And I'm like, she's going to pop up sooner rather than later. And I was just kind of relieved to hear that, because what a loss it would be for the state of Connecticut for you to just disappear into the sunset. And that's not your style anyhow,
Right. Well, you're smarter than the average bear, Gary.
Oh, stop that. go on.
You know me, and you know that my passion and commitment to the state hasn't really waned. We see people that when it's their time to retire, they want to retire because we hear the words, right? I want to relax more. I want to spend more time with my spouse and my family. I want to, have different experiences. And that's great if that's where you are, but I'm not there.
Right. Well,
And I know that there's a lot more to do for me, and I want to be able to do that in the way that, the state of Connecticut wants that to happen.
So the last time I saw you physically was over the winter, and by coincidence, it was just the night previous that you had gotten engaged. So, and I congratulated you then. I congratulate you as well again. But I would imagine that's your immediate focus is maybe a little bit of Themis time and concentrate a little bit on you, at least for the time being.
Well, certainly that's something I'm interested in, but that considering that I did just get engaged, I would never have gotten engaged or chosen somebody that I want to spend my life with unless that person was supportive of what I do and who I am.
Yeah.
This is not about, taking a little vacation. Obviously, I'm looking forward to taking a little bit of time, no question about it. But having somebody in your life, and having somebody in your life that's just supportive of the things you do and your passions and are there with you, quite frankly, has actually helped me in this decision and the decisions I'll make in the future.
Yeah, when did you know, Themis, when did you know that you were not going to be seeking re-election? This sounds like it's been well thought out, but when did you first contemplate this?
Well, I still don't really know. But, you know, the problem is, whether you've been there for 2 years or 22 years, you know this becomes who you are, right? It becomes your life. You know, I can tell you in the last 22 years, everything that's happened to me, I can tell you when it was, because it was, which election cycle was it? Was it an election year? Was it a short session year, a long session year? You know, where, what were we doing? Where were we all?
Yeah.
And so even when you know it's the right time to do something and you know the reasons you're doing it, this has been who I am for the past 22 years, particularly the past 6 years as leader. You know, living all of your lives with you, and you know all the good times, the bad times, in addition to making policy and making budgets and trying to get Connecticut back on track and do its best for Connecticut. It's the personal connections, it's the personal relationships, it's all of that. And so, even though I know intellectually it's the right time for me and it's the right thing to do, because it's going to help me make other decisions.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
It's still very emotional. I mean, it's. Every time I get a text, still 2 days later, I mean, I actually tear up.
Oh, oh. Let's take a little journey together. Let's go back to 19.
You know, I lead with my emotions too.
Oh, you certainly do. Yes,
I hope makes me effective.
It does, and it has, and it will continue to. Let's go back to 1998. I think. Right? Wasn't that your first year? Right?
Yes.
You were elected in 1998. So you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You're heading into the state capitol for the first time as an elected official. What's going through your mind? Just take me on a little journey, and we'll work our way towards the present day. So it's 1998.
I honestly, 8 million things were going through my mind. I had never really run for office before, and you know, it was baptism by fire for me in a lot of ways, because I started over a year before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I gave myself plenty of time, but I didn't know really anything about it. I mean, I had a very good friend who is still a very good friend of mine, who was a U.S. attorney, and he's like a brother to me. And he said, hey, one day, literally, this is how it happened. He said, hey, the woman who is the state rep in your district is not running again. She's running for something else. You should run for that seat. And my response was, I don't even know what the state rep district is.
Is that right?
You know, so when people, we talk to new candidates or people who might be interested in running, and they get all in a knot over the fact that they don't know anything about politics per se. And this, I didn't either, believe it or not. And I had to figure out what the district was. Was I actually in the district? You know, I had no idea what you do, how you do it. But I had people around me that were smart enough and kind of directed me, and I, you know, I followed that, and I worked really hard to do that. But it was a very tumultuous campaign,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was, you know, as I am now to a certain extent, you know, you're being judged by either how you look or the clothes you wear or, you know, where you live or whatever the issue is, which drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I just worked hard. I did 6,000 doors. I was out there every day.
Yeah.
I talked to people. You know what it is, and you look people in the eye,
okay,
and they
right.
can tell. They can right. tell in their gut that you mean it. And I think nobody thinks that they should ever agree with us all the time, but they know they want us to be honest with them.
Absolutely. What committees were you on prior to being House Minority Leader?
Well, my favorite committee of all time, I was on my entire career before I became leader of the Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. You know, I still... The past 6 years, since I haven't been on committees, I've, you know, I keep constant contact with our ranking member and our other members, because I feel like I live vicariously through them with that committee. I was on public health for many years. I was on education for many years. I was on finance, and then I was on appropriations. So I, you know, I had a kind of four big committees for 10 years straight, I think.
Wow. Do you remember the House Minority Leader back in 98 when you first got into the legislature?
Yep, it was Bob Ward.
Okay, and how about the Speaker of the House back then?
The Speaker was Moira Lyons.
Okay, yeah.
She was the first woman Speaker, you know, which was interesting for me, especially, you know, being a woman coming into that whole man's world, which it still is. But we've, We've broken down some doors.
You have.
Which I'm proud of. You know,
you have.
Proud to be the first woman leader of that caucus. I am still the only woman leader in the entire legislature, Republican or Democrat. We have the highest percentage of women in the House Republican caucus, percentage-wise, of any of the four caucuses, Republican or Democrat. So, you know, that was interesting to me, and I think it allowed me to look at it in a different way.
I want to take us now to 2014 and 2015. You get reelected, and as I get reelected for the first time in 2014. In 2015, you become House Minority Leader. What's going through your mind? What are you looking at as far as reference? Larry Caffaro was very popular. He was your predecessor. And I'm just trying to think back in those days, even myself when I was new. But you're a first-time House leader. Were you overwhelmed? You did a phenomenal job, and as you still are, but what's going through your mind then?
Well, Larry Caffaro, as you mentioned, was the House Republican leader before me. It was not just my predecessor. He was my mentor.
Yeah.
And one of my closest friends. So I was very fortunate to be able to learn from him about what a strong leader is and how you take care of your caucus and how you don't let the majority party get away with anything. And so, I mean, obviously, that's my personality to begin with, but I got to see that firsthand as his deputy for 8 years.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you, I was scared to death, completely and utterly overwhelmed. I was more overwhelmed by the idea of it than actually once it actually happened.
Well, you didn't show it, that's for sure. You didn't?
Well, no, I don't. I mean, I don't usually, but anybody that's close with me knew it. I mean, I remember, you know, a little Gary Byron story on election night. I'm sitting there at my headquarters at Orange in my district, and our campaign people are feeding us the results from the whole state of Connecticut. And so clearly we knew most of the people. I mean, if you won, we knew you because we had been working with you. And they, Gary Byron, who's Gary Byron? Like, from Newington. I don't know because it was never anybody, you know, they never contacted us. We didn't necessarily know this was going to happen. I go, well, do you have the number? No, nobody has the number. And we had to figure out like how to reach you. And it was just hysterical. And you know, you always have one of those. I mean, Charlie Ferraro was another one in the year after. Charlie Ferraro was that
year,
wasn't it?
Yep, Charlie came in with me.
He happened to represent part of Orange. At least I knew who he was.
Right.
You know, he didn't want anybody to work with him. He had the whole thing under control on his own. And, you know, but obviously we were.
I was so green.
To have you in that caucus.
Oh, thank you. And it was it's a privilege. I was so green. My campaign manager was like, stay away from the Capitol. Keep doing doors. Keep meeting people. Keep shaking hands. That you're absolutely right. I didn't know anybody until I went there. But I was in a part of a class of 64. We had a huge number of 64. And then 2 years later, when I ran for re-election in 2016, our numbers were up to what? In the 70s, right? We made it close.
Yeah.
And that gave you a bargaining chip, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, in 2017, we did that bipartisan budget, which, you know, certainly there's nothing that's perfect, let alone any budget that's ever made in the world. But that was the best budget we've ever put together because, first of all, we passed the first minority party budget on September 15th, 2017. I think at 4 in the morning, which I think is the first minority party, whatever the minority party happens to be in your state, in the country, ever. And then that forced the majority party and the governor to have to sit down with us and go through, you know, 8 torturous weeks in one room that none of us ever like to go in again. We always say we have PTSD from that room, and figure out a budget that made sense for the state that we could get the votes on to agree. And that's how budgets should go. But when you have one party that's the majority for, you know, for 50 years, basically, they do what they want. If you know, they offer it to you. If you don't like it, then, you know, too bad. We'll do our own. But the other interesting dynamic that year is Governor Malloy ended up being cut out by his own party.
That's right.
And obviously us, because we had negotiated with him all year long. I mean, he was very involved the whole time. But, you know, you had a governor's office, you had a majority party and a minority party, but a minority party that was almost tied with the majority party. And he basically, you know, he told us, he goes, listen, you guys, I'm happy to meet with you and do whatever you want individually together. If you think it's better that you go out on your own, then give that a try. And we did. And that's how it worked. We had to put together a budget that didn't just have a simple majority. that there was veto proof.
That's right.
I remember that.
He was going to veto it if he could have. And
that's
we
right.
got a veto proof budget. And this is one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had.
And I remember that vividly. It's, I'm so proud, you know, to have worked with you that my two terms, and I know we'll talk in 2 weeks and, you know, going forward, I know you're going to finish out your term. Before we got to take a break, I've got to ask you one thing. You know, with you leaving next year, with Len Fasano also announcing that he's not coming back, and you know Joe Arosemowicz, you know, he announced that he is kind of sticking with the unwritten rule of two terms as a Speaker of the House. How it's going to be a different dynamic come next January? Do you have any people in mind? I know you can't get involved with who your successor will be, and it's probably great that you stay out and not show any allegiance to anybody, let the process play out. But are there names? I'm going to say this in a plural way, not a name. Are there a few names that come to your mind as far as being the next, House Republican leader?
Well, I mean, let's just say this. Typically, when you're a speaker's leaving, you look to the majority leader as the potential next speaker,
mm-hmm.
right? When you are a majority leader, minority leader, you look to the deputies of that group as potential next speakers. I mean, obviously for me, my chief deputy is Vin Candelora, who has been a great partner with me for many years.
Yes.
My other deputies in our caucus are Noreen Kokaruda and Leslie Zupkis and Tom O'Day. You know, mm-hmm. so I mean, just so we can talk in a way that's not, you know, to your point, I can't really get involved
right.
in directing people, but people usually look to the deputies. Not always, but typically
sure.
that's who you look to, because those are the people that have been on the ground with the leader the whole time.
That's right, and he's certainly well-qualified. All right, Themis, we got to take a break. Thank you so much. Congratulations. And we're going to talk in 2 weeks and continue this conversation.
We are, and we're all going to stay tuned for the next step, right?
You got that right. And I hope you think of us when you decide to, I don't know, maybe make an announcement at some point. I'm just putting it out there. That's all.
Hey, Gary, you're a House Republican. You're my family.
Oh, God bless. I love her. I really do. I can't thank you enough, Demis. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Gary.
You got it.